And we're starting our class on the Jewish home. Our class is dedicated by Gago to his wife Yael, the Eish Eschayil with whom he has built his family and who has stood by him for all the years of his traveling. And tonight, it is thanks to him and his Eish Eschayil that I am here. Because I was stuck in Beit Shan, and he said, I'll give you a ride to the bus. And then he realized that I wouldn't make it on time to class. So he took me all the way to Jerusalem, and I've met him for the first time tonight. And he took me all the way here, because he said, if the guys at Machon Meir are waiting for your Torah, I want to be a part of that. I'm bringing you all the way to Machon Meir. So I told him that I feel bad. His wife also had to be a partner in his coming here tonight and taking me a two-hour drive to get here. So we'll dedicate our learning to him and his Eish Eschayil, and a stark appreciation, Yishar Koach. Our topic tonight is called framing. And it's a topic which it's easy to understand from afar, but when we're a part of it, it's harder to notice. And I'll begin with a true story. There was a couple who were happily married, and they had many children. And then the husband's friends started telling him, your wife is way too harsh with the kids. Boy, you should take her to some classes on how to be a parent, parenting classes, because she shouldn't be yelling at them as much. She shouldn't be as tough with them. She shouldn't be as harsh with them. Now, anyone who's run a home knows that you have about 30, 40 times an hour that you have to deal with kids not doing what they should be doing. And that's not an exaggeration. Sometimes it's 30, 40 times a minute. You know, this kid is pouring the juice and he's about to spill, and that kid is pulling the cake off the table. And last night I was trying to just count some things and the baby was up. And my wife said, you sure you don't want to wait a half hour till the baby's sleeping? She was right, I should have waited the half hour. I spent the full half hour. Every time I tried counting, he came and pulled the cup out of my hand. He pulled everything. I spent the full half hour counting one, two, three, and then grabbing the baby, putting him there. It's like a comedy show, right? But that's normal. That's what babies do. That's what children do. So we once had a guest at our house who did one of the greatest disservices a guest could do. He framed us. What he did was he sat at the table, and he's a big-time mathematician, like an actuary, and he said to me, you know, the kids are sitting around the table, and I just calculated that you don't have 20 seconds to eat before a child asks you something. Now, if you factor the people around the table, that means if every child only asks you a question once every 2.5 minutes, you can't get in 3 bites without answering a child. Now, before he said this to us, I never noticed how often the kids are talking to me. You know, you're sitting at a Shabbos table, kids are talking to you, you're talking to them, you're eating, they're eating. But when someone suddenly tells you, you know, I just calculated, you can't get 3 bites in without a child asking for your attention, you suddenly realize it. They framed the situation from you. Framing is when you give a perspective. And that perspective changes the way we approach life. We can, you know, they say put on pink glasses, pink shaded glasses, and you'll see the world as being pink. But we don't realize how much of life depends on framing. A lot of our reactions depend on how we frame things. Prejudices are a form of framing. If they tell you that the average 6-footer is going to be a terrorist, so the next time you see a 6-footer, you're scared of him. If they tell you that every Muslim could knife you, so then you see a Muslim, you're scared. Part of what happens in life is that we do frame things. Sometimes more accurately, sometimes less accurately, but we frame things. I didn't say good or bad. We're going to see in marriage where it's a tool that could be used for the positive, and it's a tool that could be used for the negative.
And nonetheless, it's natural. Something that simply naturally occurs. We naturally frame things, people frame things for us.
To some degree, but it can change our attitude in a major way. I'll give you a story, but in regards to this couple, it destroyed their marriage. You realize, guys, that every story I give, even if it's true, I change enough facts that even if the person were in the audience, they wouldn't know I was talking about them. But the story's true. It ruined their marriage because if someone tells you and convinces you that your spouse is too harsh with the kids, so then everything they do will be viewed at through that prism. Why'd you have to yell at them like that? And why couldn't you just give in and let them eat Shabbos cereal on a weekday? And is it so terrible that the kids spilled the milk for the third time today? Don't you think we should be more patient? Doesn't that child need more love? You could look at all of parenting and say, you shouldn't be so tough with the child. And then it doesn't matter what the other party is going to do, because when you're looking through that prism, everything will seem too tough. And that couple went to therapy and came to an agreement with the therapist. This is what the wife will do and this is what she won't do. And she lived up to her end of the agreement. But it was still too tough in her husband's eyes because someone convinced him that she was too tough with the kids. And he begged her, couldn't you be more gentle? Couldn't you be more patient? They went to the therapist a second time, came up with another deal. Again, more limitations. She'll be less tough with the kids. Boom, same thing happened. And a third time and a fourth time till they couldn't last together anymore. And it all started with framing. It all started with his being convinced that she was too tough. And so nothing she could do would placate him because he was convinced she was too tough. Framing is very powerful. The guys were sitting in class, this goes back 8 or 9 years ago, and I told them, someone's coming to check out the Machon. And this is a person who, he is a top guy in Google, super genius, multimillionaire. He's developed programs that the whole world uses, and he's contemplating, he's not sure whether he wants to attend Machon Meir or not, he wants to return to observant life or not. Be nice to him, okay? Fine. We're in the middle of class and a guy walks in. And the guy has hair down to his ankles and it hasn't been washed in weeks. And the guy is wearing torn jeans and he's completely, you know, he's completely disorganized and unpleasant to sit next to, and you could smell that he hasn't changed his socks at least in 3 weeks. And the guys, you could hear them whispering one to the other, that's the smell of genius. The guy's been too busy, you know. He doesn't even notice this. He's writing computer programs and whatever, and you could see that in spite of everything that was not so comfortable to look at or be next to, guys were sitting next to him, helping him out, can I get you a drink? Everyone's nice to him, right? Buddy, buddy. And now I told them the guy's name, I'll make it up, the guy's name is going to be Brad Greenfield. So we're learning and everyone's nice to him, extra nice to him, and everything's going nicely. And then we take a break and we start the next class. And I say, can everyone introduce themselves? And then we get to this guy's name and everyone's waiting for him to say Brad Greenfield. And he says, no, I'm Joe Schumacher. Oh, so you're not Brad Greenfield? Suddenly, no, boom! No one's sitting next to him. This is so uncomfortable. Why can't the guy take a shower? Why does the guy have to wear the same socks for 3 weeks straight? Framing. If you think he's a super genius, you start looking at all that externals and you say, well, that's par for the course. That's why, you know, his mind is somewhere else. Maybe he's still that same super genius, right? Maybe. Framing. We develop perspective on people. And within marriage, this can be lethal. A person has to pay attention. Sometimes it's the in-laws. Sometimes it's the parents. You get married and your wife's parents keep asking, has Chaim gotten a normal job yet? Has Chaim been hired yet? Did Chaim get your number of degrees yet? Notice the yet. Has Chaim made up with his parents yet? Does Chaim treat you as well as you deserve yet? Any of these lines slowly, slowly erode the relationship. It is almost impossible to stand up to the torrent that parents can give out. People underestimate how much parents can affect our perspective, how much they can frame our perspective of our spouse. And it's not only parents. It can be friends. It can be a neighbor. A very good friend of mine, was about to get engaged, and then his parents just said one sentence. They said, she's not so special, you can do better. That's it, one sentence. She's not so special, you can do better. So he calls me up and he says, do you think I should marry her? I said, I've never met her, I don't know. He said, do you have any problem? Is there any reason not to marry her? So that was all he could quote. His parents said, she's not so special, you can do better. But that was enough to undo all the time he had dated her, and he was enthralled, and he was excited, and he was ready to propose, and he left the country without proposing. He said, no, what can I say? So I said to him, you know, you don't have to take my word for it because I don't know the girl, but that's not a reason not to marry her, because your parents think she's not so special, but you think she is so special. Your parents think you can do better? Who said? Why do you think, what's wrong? You think she's great. So your parents don't yet know how great she is. I wouldn't turn down a girl just for that. And ultimately he changed his heart. Came back and they got married. They're happily married till today. Yeah. But I say happily married. I hope they're happily married. I wouldn't know. But it's very hard. And we have to pay attention. Because sometimes people can do this to us. The first example is parents, because that's the most classical. But it's not only parents. It can be negative influences. And if a person notices such an influence, then you have to sever ties with that person. And that it could be an aunt, and it could be a friend. It could be someone you know at work. If there's someone that is causing you to view your spouse negatively, you have to either cause them to stop, or you have to stop the relationship. The most important thing in your life is your home, is your wife, is the home you're building together. And if there's someone that's posing a threat to that, you have to notice it. Husbands have to notice it. Wives have to notice it. This can become especially challenging when people have stepchildren. I know right now we're talking about generally building a home, but sometimes stepchildren will try to do this because there's a tremendous tension that's naturally there when you're being brought up by a step-parent. And so sometimes stepchildren will try to frame the spouse as the annoying one, the geek, the obnoxious one, etc. And there, you usually don't have that option of saying, you know, you guys, you don't have the option of cutting the person out of your life. You have to find ways around it. But we have to realize it's a potent and real danger. Now, this can be used for the positive. It's not only a negative. Framing can also be used for the positive. And let's take a few examples. Can you give me a few examples?
Compliments?
Not yet. How do you use framing in the positive?
To fix a problem.
Give an example.
Like you said, if you said that one of the parents is being too strict on their children, maybe it is a problem. And you do need, by framing it, you've woken them up to the problem and you've changed it. That's something they accept there as a problem.
Oh, I'm talking about, I'll tell you an example we both know. There's a tremendous Talmud Chacham in Torah B'Tzion who every time we speak about things that pertain to his wife, he always says, I'm so lucky, my wife pampers me. My wife, in Hebrew, mefaneket oti. Now, if you look at marriage that way, I am so lucky to have her. If you would start sentences with that, I am one of the luckiest people because I have her.
That's not labeling.
If you frame things that way, how do I look at things? I am lucky because without her, if you start thinking of life in that way, without her, I wouldn't be able to bring up these kids. I wouldn't be able to have this home. I have so many wonderful things thanks to her. From that perspective, let me see life. Then I'll suddenly notice, without her, I wouldn't have my laundry done. Without her, no one would call my parents to wish them good Shabbos. Without her, I wouldn't remember that I'm obligated to this event, that event, another event. Can I look at life from that perspective? The guy who marries the girl I told you about last week, who wakes him up for Minyan, he could look at it and say, what a nag. And then he's framing things. Boy, is she nagging. And then when different things come up, his first thought is going to be, ding, 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 she's nagging again. Right? You framed her as the nag. But if you frame her as, I always look for someone who's going to be great in halacha, and I'm so lucky to have someone who's stronger than me in halacha. So then when many different things come up, the bell's going to go off and say, there's another example of how lucky I am to have someone who's stronger than me in halacha. We do frame things. You wake up in the morning, and your roommate's alarm clock goes off, and you could just be annoyed because his alarm clock isn't shutting, and he's not turning it off. Or you could say, he is an annoying person. He doesn't care about me. How's that for a frame? You don't care about me. If I'm going to use that frame, so then I'm going to have many examples for that. You could have taken out the garbage on your way out. You don't care about me. You didn't take out the garbage on your way out. You could have poured me the glass of water first. You don't care about me. You poured for yourself first. If we look at life through that frame, then everything's negative. If I look at life and I say, boy, do you care about me, so then I'm going to notice he poured me a cup of water. Which side am I going to notice? Well, it's a question of, what's my perspective? What's my framing? And if you think about it, you do it all the time. If we would just choose one person in the classroom, obviously I won't do this, and we'd say, this person is annoying, and that's why it was a perfect segue from the Chafetz Chaim. When we speak about someone and say they're not so bright, so then you will notice how they're not so bright. I'll give you another example, which might sound cynical to you. There are people who want to see Hashgacha Pratit in everything they do. It's God talking. So then everything is going to be viewed that way. There's nothing that won't be viewed that way. Now, some people will tell you it's the truth, and some people tell you it's not the truth. I'm not going there. But I'm saying if you frame life a certain way, you see life a certain way, and it's a choice we repeatedly make. And with regards to our spouse, we have to be careful not to use a negative frame, and yes, to use a positive frame. The negative frames happen on their own. Whether you like it or not, there will be moments where you start thinking, she's a this and she's a that. You gave a label, you set up a frame, and through that you look at her. The positive frames you have to create, because our weakness from the days of Adam and Eve is that we take things for granted. I'll give you a simple example. When was the last time anyone walked into Rav Bigun and said, thank you for taking care that we have lights and heating? I'm sure that there were people who complained there wasn't adequate heating in the Machon. But how many people thought about the fact that Rav Bigun has to carry the weight of over 1 million shekel a month just to cover the cost of the Machon? The costs of the Machon are over 1 million shekel a month that Rav Bigun takes the responsibility to put together somehow. And so there's a room here. You know that what the electric company takes? Arnona, just taxes for having this building in Jerusalem. And Rav Bigun's working on all that. I am sure that people have approached Rav Listman and Rav Bigun about things that should be better in the Machon. Has anyone approached them to thank them for the meals that are delicious, for all the wonderful things that are good here? Here we frame things. If I would look at it as, I am so lucky that, just start your sentences with that. How many times do people wake up in the morning and they start the sentence with, it is annoying because, you know those postcards? I love you because, and then a whole list, right? So, I am annoyed this morning because, what's going wrong in my life is, now we can make a whole list. There's a rule which we will repeat over and over and over again. That couple that came to Rabbi Feinstein and said, we decided to get divorced, but then we decided we're going to try it all over again. And what did Rabbi Feinstein tell them? Don't. So they said, why not? And he said, because no marriage can work on the terms we're trying. Because if you're trying, then you're experimenting. And if you're experimenting, then you're keeping a scorecard. Should I or shouldn't I? And if you keep a scorecard, then every single day in married life has a whole list of things that are annoying. But when you've decided, I'm going to make it work, I'm invested, it's going to work, so then you let all those things fall by the wayside. You're not focused on them. Again, if I start the morning and I say, I'm so annoyed that, I'll be able to fill a list. Everyone will, every day. But if I start the morning and I start with, I'm so thankful that, can a person challenge himself to say thank you 20 times before he leaves in the morning? It's not hard. You have many more than 20 things to say thank you for. Just say thank you in the morning. How many times does a person say thank you? How many times does a person think, I'm so lucky that? I am. I'm lucky. You know, when here in Jerusalem, you're right next to the Center for the Blind. When I'm on the bus and someone gets on the bus and it's a person with a handicap, so aside from trying to help the person, I then sit down and I won't do what I'm doing. I will focus and ask myself, did I have enough kavanah this morning when I said, Pokeach Ivrim? Thank you, Hashem, for giving me the ability to see. Did I have enough kavanah when I said, Matira Surim? Hashem, you released me from the bounds of sleepness. I can walk. I'm sorry to tell you, but I always come back with the conclusion, better have more kavanah tomorrow, right? But I try to take it in. I try to look at what I'm seeing and saying, hey, don't fly through those blessings in the morning. They have meaning. Well, that's true in a lot of life. Framing. What's my framework? What am I looking at? And it's a very powerful tool. It's a tool that can make people upset with life, upset with the yeshiva, upset with Judaism, and certainly upset with their wife. And it's a tool that a person can use for the positive, to be happy, to see what's good, to see what's good in their spouse, to see what's good about life, to see what's good with their kids. People are so focused about this should be better, that should be better. They're sweet, they're wonderful, what's wrong? Why not be happy with them? How often does a kid get positive feedback? How many times a day does a kid get told they're doing something wrong? How many times a day does a kid get told they're doing something right? Simple question. You know our ratio, right? The ratio has to be 20 to 1. For every one negative comment, you got to have 20 positive. I don't think people reach a ratio of 1 to 1. The ratio should be 20 to 1. There are for sure at least 20 things he's doing right. But you know what? The ratio should be 20 to 1 about ourselves. We're doing a lot of things right. We are. We are. I'm not, but how many things do we say to ourselves, our voice in our head turns on when we do something wrong? But we did a lot of things right. Hey, you guys are here. You did something right. Yeah? You're here. You're learning Torah. You're in yeshiva. It means you did a lot of things right. You're here at this hour of the night. You did a lot of things right. Okay. Framing. What am I focused on? Am I looking at the positive? Am I looking at the negative? And again, the key here is to find the term that will be the frame. In the negative, we know the term. She's so annoying. She spends too much. Right? You can think of the... You're on the phone and she's talking to you as you're trying to talk on the phone. Ding, ding, ding. Boy, is she annoying. Well, you walk through the front door and she didn't tell you good evening. She just said, you know you forgot that garbage bag. It's still waiting for you. Don't worry. Hold it. Good evening. How are you? It's so good to see you. So if my ding, ding, ding is she's so annoying, so then I'll find many ways to end that dot, dot, dot. She's so annoying because that. No, you can fill the gaps. But if my thing is, she works so hard. She is so dedicated. I am so lucky to have her. So then I walk through the front door and she says that. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe it. She had to deal with the whole day. The garbage was full. How did she manage? How did she manage feeding the kids three meals while I was away? How did she manage when I forgot the garbage? I'm so sorry. I'll deal with that right away. How am I framing the conversation? Another simple example. We come home. Every man in this classroom has a certain frame of what the home should look like. I work. I come home to my castle. Okay, you didn't say that. I know. You won't admit it in front of everyone else. But I finished my job here. So when I come home, I'm supposed to rest. I've been working. I could help. But I'm being very nice and kind and good when I'm helping, because I come home, I'm coming to my castle. Okay, you won't say that on the dates, I know that. Now, what would happen if you would frame it differently? If you would say, my number one job is being a husband and a parent. My number two job that allows me to do my number one job is what I do during the day. So then when I come home, I better roll up my sleeves. Of course I'm here to do the dishes, take out the garbage, help the kids with homework. If you come home and you're... perspective, your frame is, I worked, I did my thing, let me rest, come on. I've been working all day. But if my frame is, she works, and I work. And she gets to work at the number one job, more hours, she's raising the kids. And I only get to my number one job later, after I've had to exert some of my energies in my number two job, which is what facilitates my number one job. The greatest impact you will have on the world, for most people, is most likely the family you build. More than anything else, it's the one mark you make on the world. What's your number one job? That's your number one job. Even David HaMelech, with all the wonderful things David HaMelech did, he said, number one is my wife and my family and my kids. That's your responsibility. That's part of being human. That's part of who you are. Everything else is the second level. You build on top of that. But the base level, my house, it's got to be number one. So this concept of framing, how do I view my home? Is it number one or is it the annoyance? Abraham Lincoln certainly viewed it as an annoyance. That's why he spent so much time traveling. George Washington certainly saw it as an annoyance. That's why he was sleeping with all his neighbors' wives. There were many people in world history who had who viewed their home as something I got to deal with. Ben Franklin of the three was the most moral because at least he sent checks to all the children he fathered throughout the world. He would send checks all over the world, Ben Franklin. Yeah, he was promiscuous all over the world, so he would take care of the kids at least, you know. In that sense, he was humane, right? Okay, but we repeatedly say our number one responsibility is our home. And everything else comes way after that. And if I could frame it that way, then of course I have to have strength for the home. You know, So this concept of framing is very powerful. It's powerful in interpersonal relations. It's powerful, you know, I had to go to the post office last week, and I made a mistake. As I was on my way to the Kotel, I went into the post office that's right before Shaar Yafo. So I'm standing in line, and four Muslims stand behind me talking in Arabic. Now, every time a Muslim reached into his coat, I jumped. I took a step back. I'm standing 10 feet away from where people have been stabbed repeatedly, right? So, on the one hand, I don't want to give up my place in line. On the other hand, I don't want to turn my back on them. How do you deal? Well, what can I do? They frame themselves. When children are taught to stab, and when the average citizen is... We don't know which citizen is pulling out a knife and which isn't. What can you do? Framing defines the way we view the world. We frame things, and we have a choice. We don't have to be passive. The world doesn't decide the frame for us. We decide the frame. And within our relationships, if we choose to focus on the positive, it means you will have to make a conscious effort and think, what do I admire about my spouse? What are the key things that I can look at her and say, I am so lucky I married her? And very often you don't have it defined. I'll end with one important side note. Your wife will sometimes ask you, do you love me? Of course the answer is yes. And then the next question is going to be, why? And don't you dare answer that question. The answer to that question is, it is all-encompassing. It's not because you are such a kind person, because you are, but it's not because of that. It's not because you're such a caring person, even though you are. It's not because of that. It's not because you're such a wonderful mother, which you are. It's not because of that. It's not because you're such a wonderful mother to our children, which you are, and such a wonderful wife to me, which you are. You can list a lot of things and tell her it's not because of that. It's because of something far more encompassing, which is who you are. That's true, and that's the true answer to her. But it's also true that we do have to define for ourselves, and by defining for ourselves, we can develop the frame through which we will see and notice and pay attention and stress the positive that is within our spouse. And again, I'm going back to what we began with. And if you notice in your life that there are people who are causing you to frame your spouse negatively, then you either cause them to stop or you remove them from your life. But don't think that that can continue happening and you'll be able to build a beautiful marriage. Most often that's not the case. Most often over time, the people who keep pounding at us that our spouse has a certain very serious shortcoming are successful. And we can see examples of this throughout. You will very often notice people married and you don't understand. Sometimes the one spouse is the kindest person in the world, the most patient, the nicest, and the other one's a shrew, the wicked witch of the West, and you're wondering, how do the two match? Well, he's looking at her through a certain prism. And that makes him happy with her. And sometimes it's the opposite. She is the most wonderful person on the planet, and he's the most annoying person on the planet. But she doesn't see him that way. And beautiful relationships can flourish. It's a question of how you choose to see a person. And framing is the key point here. What point am I going to focus on? Someone asked me to convince a couple to get divorced. So I said, why? Why do you think they have to get divorced? So they said, don't you see he's a good-for-nothing, that husband? At home all day, he doesn't help her, he doesn't help her raise the kids, he doesn't help to fund the family. She's got to do everything single-handedly. She raises the kids, she feeds them, she takes them out, she funds the family, everything she's doing. I said, I don't know. When I see them together, I see him as a wonderful father. I see their kids as each having many disabilities, social disabilities, learning disabilities. And I see that he treats them patiently and kindly. And I don't know of many people who would have the patience to deal with kids who are so out of control. And I see him raising them wonderfully. And I see he's a great father. And I think that she has a great asset. I don't know if she'll ever find someone who will be so patient with such kids. And they said, well, I'm happy you see it that way because I don't. I said, well, I certainly wouldn't convince her to get divorced from him. The fact that he's not funding the family, well, maybe one day he will. And he has the skills for it. And the fact that you're saying he's a lousy father, I think he's a great father. I think the kids are problematic, and he's making the best of the situation he has. Well, I could tell you that a few years have passed since then, and today he's making a very nice living. He's funding the family very nicely. And the kids are, Baruch Hashem, growing up very nicely. And I don't know if the person till today, I don't know if they agree with me, because they have framed him as a good-for-nothing. And I'm not sure there's anything he can do that will change their perspective of him. And we have this choice. And we will often be tempted with our spouse to think of them in negative terms. We have to stop and remember our first class on the Jewish home. In marriage, it's mind over matter. You decide how you will look at the marriage. And this is one of the key points. Look for the positive and frame things that way. Look at them through the positive prism. And in the end, you end up being happier. And don't think you're deceiving yourself. It's true. Just like the story I'm telling you here. It's true, he is a good father. It's true, he does have patience. It's true, his kids do have problems. Objectively, psychologists have said so. So there's objectively an issue here. And he's doing a great job. Now his wife had a choice which point he'd focus on. Well, she's focusing on the right point, I hope, because you see they're still married. And that's a choice we make. We don't notice it when we make it negatively. If we notice it and think about it, we can make it positively, and then we end up happier and we end up building.